Let us be silent as Frank prepares us for worship. Tayakoto te whanau o akwet i r terens. Tayakoto, no matter here. No mai, hire mai, ki se hui o te rane. Hire mai, ki se ko papa o te ra, ko clay. Nelson, toku igua, te akoto, te akoto, te atato katoa. Somebody better find me a tissue. I thought I got all this out of me. Parody. The truth is, but apparently not. Thank you. Welcome all, church follow and visitors. To this place of worship, virtual and physical, made sacred by Auckland Unitarians for 122 years. Welcome to those joining us remotely, and to those here in the building, and to those watching the recording at a later time. For those here in person, you're invited to join us for a cuppa immediately following our service. It is our very important sacrament of hospitality. My opening words are from a poem by James Baldwin. Nothing is fixed. For those not familiar with James Baldwin, he's an American Black author who's written many important books. For nothing is fixed forever. Forever, forever. It is not fixed. The earth is always shifting. The light is always changing. The sea does not cease to grind down a rock.
Chris is going to help me today. It's my privilege for us together to light this chalice and also to have the opportunity to do the reading for today. The reading for today was written for ministers by Celia Thurston at a clergy retreat. And I dedicate this to Clay, for whom this is his last service in his role as a paid minister. I light this chalice for all the times, I have to put it down, sorry. I light this chalice for all the times you have lit this chalice. For every time you've struck the match, or flicked that zapper thing there, which fortunately Chris did for me this morning, or empowered a nervous parishioner, or those with a tremor, to do the same. I light this chalice for all that you've done. For all, I do have a tremor, so sorry about this. For all you've fostered and cultivated and nudged. For all you've suggested and directed and maneuvered. I light this chalice for the intensity of your reactions in responding to grace and rejecting mediocrity within the tender balance between tradition and choice. I light this chalice for your having been here and continuing to be here out of calling, out of commitment, and out of love. I light this chalice for the time you have spent preparing, and preaching and hurting and healing. I light this chalice for you, Clay, and on behalf of all Auckland Unitarians, I thank you.
And now if you'll join me in saying the covenant of our congregation. Love is the doctrine of this church, the quest for truth
is the sacrament, and service is his prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom, to serve humankind in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony, thus we be harmony.
Now I invite Jamie to play some special music for us.
The special piece I'll be playing today is a Bach fugue in D minor. It's nicknamed the giant fugue because you'll hear, if you can hear in the pedal line, you'll hear the giant climbing up and falling down.
Thank you.
I decided to entitle my last random musing that great Kiwi expression, "Nah, yeah." As has been mentioned once or twice recently, and to my great sadness, I'm retiring at the end of the month. Because I have loved all 41 years of my ordained ministry in two denominations and my 9 years with you, I want to scream, "Nah! This isn't how I planned it." But yeah, it is the reality I must come to accept, kind of. The expectation of ministers when they retire is to absent themselves for at least a year from the congregation they served to make room for the new minister. As trade UU ministers don't grow on trees in New Zealand or Australia, it will be a while before we can hire my replacement. I've been asked to help fill the vacuum on a voluntary basis while you figure out where you want to go. But I do want to respect the tradition of making room for the future, which could be my other title. I will take direction from the MC as best I can, as hard for a minister, and the transition team. Lead worship on occasion when asked by the worship associates. Will help mentor those taking a worship study course at the request of ANZUA and UK Unitarians. Sit ex officio on MC and the Finance Committee, and offer information, advice, and pearls of wisdom very rarely, cautiously, and only when begged. This explanation got me reflecting on the dynamics of making room for the future, and why it is necessary, yet so hard to accomplish in most aspects of our lives. Because I have to scale back my ministry, I find myself reminiscing on my journey like old men do, which might shed light on the difficulty. I'll try not to impose my life on you beyond human endurance. It's a promise, I hope. But don't worry, I began when I was 5. I was baptized with my mother and my baby sister in an Episcopal church built in the middle of an Oregon bean field. That's bean field. The bean farmer donated the land on the condition that we would go out in procession once a year to bless his fields with what we call bells and smells. In other traditions, you ring bells and wave smoke around. The priest was Father Bossart, a Russian immigrant with a colorful presence. He had a daughter my age in Sunday school who would one day be among the first 11 women illegally ordained as priests in the Episcopal Church. Illegal or not, the rules say it can't be undone, and she still is practicing as a priest. But I get ahead of myself. That would come to impact me over 20 years later. Father Bossart defined for my 5-year-old self what church was. one of my members, is his getting up at the family service and chewing out those who are complaining about the disturbances by children during worship. He made it clear that the kids were worshiping as children should. Those who were bothered could go to the later service. A couple years later, we moved to Yakima, carved out of the orchards of central Washington. One day while playing with friends in the front yard, a black 56 Ford with a fire engine red interior stopped in front of the house. A rotund man in a black suit and white collar got out of the car. He said he was Father Baker. Then he went to the front door, introduced himself to my mother, and asked if he could take the kids out for ice cream. The 50s were a more innocent time. She said yes. I remember it so clearly because I had my first banana split. It was not long before we were attending St. Timothy's, Father Baker's new church. He believed you build up the church by feeding people every chance you got. While there, I got my first Bible, a prize for memorizing Bible passages, singing in the children's choir, and becoming an acolyte, or what Catholics call it, an altar boy. All that furthered my understanding of what church was, and I loved it. We moved a lot when I was growing up. The next unexpected destination was a small college town high in the Colorado Rockies. Always being the new guy made me an easy target for bullying by my peers and even some of my teachers. Well, while I know many of you cannot say the same, my safe space was the small Episcopal church where Father Bam, fresh out of seminary, was the minister. So we'd gone from Mozart to Baker to Bam. They're all beings. Here I experienced the church youth group. It was a place to hang out with new friends, learn more about my faith tradition, explore more about who I am, and do service projects for the community and church. Church was fun, good for my fragile self-image. Now, there would be other moves, actually, lots of them. But to get my drift, church continued to be my safe place, which constantly challenged me to grow in unexpected ways that I didn't often realize. I didn't understand it then. I had no input in deciding to move, but each move made room for a future I could not anticipate. Okay, moving ahead a few chapters, a lot of new chapters. I still didn't appreciate how hard the future was to predict. For instance, I was accepted into a PhD program at a highly prestigious university and ended up going to seminary. I sure as hell didn't see that coming. When I was approaching graduation from seminary, I was headhunted by various churches. I was looking for a traditional parish, much like those I grew up in. So I was surprised, to say the least, when the rector, what we call a vicar in America, when the rector of Bruton Parish invited me to interview. You won't know anything about that, but it was not what I was looking for. But going for the interview, it only took an hour, and then my family could explore Colonial Williamsburg, Virginia. Well, Broome Parish is the oldest Episcopal church in continuous use in the U.S., going well back to colonial times. It has more than a million visitors a year. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Patrick Henry, Thomas Paine, and many other founding fathers worshiped there. Pocahontas was baptized in their baptismal font. Williamsburg is also home to the College of William and Mary, established by royal charter in 1693, making it America's second oldest university. Any idea what the first is? Well, back to the interview, held in the rector's study. It exceeded an hour because church leaders would just happen to drop by and chat. Then the rector invited me to walk down to William and Mary to meet the college's president. We conversed for nearly an hour when the rector suggested we gather the family for lunch. For a lunch his wife had prepared at the rectory. After lunch, he took us for a lengthy behind-the-scenes walking tour of Williamsburg. When the time came to go home, he took me aside and offered me the position of assistant rector of Merton Parish and chaplain of William and Mary. I was stunned. But not as much as the rector when I turned down the offer. Yeah, it was flattering. But nah, it wasn't the kind of church I saw myself serving. So I firmly closed the door that I had room for the future. A week later, I accepted a position on top of a frozen lake outside Buffalo, New York. It looked like where I belonged, but it wasn't. 2 years later, I was looking again. I was offered a position I didn't seek at St. John's Lafayette Square, which you may have heard of, which is across from the White House, where every president of the U.S. has worshipped. Hell no, I certainly didn't belong there. It had no resemblance to my ideal church. A few weeks later, a lovely church in a small town near Pittsburgh offered me the position of rector. Now, this was more like it. But before I could accept, my mentor in Buffalo asked me to consider another position first. Once again, it did not fit what I was looking for, but I had promised him to wait. It was Christ Church Cranbrook, a highly influential parish of 3,000 members north of Detroit, with an annual budget of over $1 million. Eat your heart out, finance community. It had been built by an influential newspaper publisher who was a friend of Henry Ford. The CEOs of both Ford and GM were members. And yet, surprisingly, it was a very liberal church. The rector had been informed of my reluctance, so he drove to Buffalo to make his case. He was very charismatic, but I declined. I still remember seeing the church No, not one to take no for an answer. He convinced me to come visit the church. I still remember seeing it for the first time. It was gorgeous, as well as intimidating. It would put cathedrals to shame. He pulled out all the stops, kind of like Jamie, including a visit with the Bishop of Michigan. He explained that there were 5 clergy on staff, but I would be the number 2 responsible for running the church while he dealt with diocesan and national church affairs. I still declined. I knew what my future was, and that wasn't it. As I was getting in the car to return home, the rector pointed out that if I knew with certainty what my future was, it probably wasn't. And I was, I had a long drive home, and during which I had an epiphany. I realized that church has many things to many people. We all have our own experiences. But for me, church was a beloved community, not a club. It was a place where the afflicted were comforted, and the comfortable were afflicted. But what it wasn't was safe. Every time you come in those doors, you risk being transformed, leaving different than when you came in. And that's what it's supposed to be. So, when I got home, I called him and made room for my future. My time at Cranbrook changed everything. From that time forward, I only accepted positions that honored the future. What else could explain my 9 years at St. Matthew in the city of all places, and 9 years with you of all places, in a country I barely knew anything about when I was in Oregon, Washington, Colorado. Neither place was on my future itinerary, nor did they resemble those churches I grew up in, that it had frozen my idea of being church. So, here we are. I have no idea what the future holds for my retirement, but I will try to make room for it to be revealed. I do know that my past journey in the ministry and my preconceived notions about how to do church will not be allowed to prevent you from making room for your future as a congregation. It's time for me to get out of the way. A creative time is before you. And I hope to glimpse from afar what you do with it in whatever years I've granted. I'm confident it will be magnificent. Bless me. I love you all. Please join me in the words for extinguishing the chalice. We extinguish the flame, but not the light of truth, the light of community, or the power of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. Yay. My closing words. Beloved, may love guide you on the journey forward. Joy meet you at every turn, and hope be your daily practice. May gratitude companion you, compassion embolden you, and open-hearted courage be your unending choice. May peace challenge you, dear ones. Generosity empower you. And may you know in every day that you are enough, just exactly as you are, and you are not alone. Blessed be, and farewell, Mitchell. Our postlude is by Jamie.
The postlude today will be a piece by Mendelssohn. The postlude will be Mendelssohn Sonata and the final movement finale.
Thank you.
We are blessed by two outstanding musicians. Let us thank them. Okay, just because I'm leaving, you don't get our discussion questions. How has your life evolved in ways you had not planned? Name one or two things that changed your course. So break down into groups of five, try to keep it less than six, and have at it.